Rincewind lay on the floor with his hands over his ears. The sound of thunder filled the underground chamber. Blue and purple light shone so brightly that he could see it through his eyelids. Finally, the cacophony subsided. There were still the sounds of the storm outside, but the light had faded to a blue-white glow, and the sound into a steady humming. Rincewind risked rolling over and opening his eyes. Hanging from rusted chains in the roof were big glass globes. Each one was the size of a man, and lightning crackled and sizzled inside, stabbing at the glass, seeking a way out. At one time there must have been many more, but dozens of the big globes had fallen down over the years and lay in pieces on the floor. There were still scores up there, swaying gently on their chains as the imprisoned thunderstorms fought for their freedom. The air felt greasy. Sparks crawled over the floor and crackled on each angle. Rincewind stood up. His beard streamed out as a mass of individual hairs. The lightning globes shone down on a round lake of, to judge from the ripples, pure quicksilver. In the centre was a low, five-sided island. As Rincewind stared, a boat came drifting gently around to his side of the pool, making a little slup-slup noise as it moved through the mercury. It was not a lot larger than a rowing boat, and lying on its tiny deck was a figure in armour. Or, possibly, just the armour. If it was just empty armour, then it was lying in the arms-folded position of a suit of armour that has passed away. Rincewind sidled around the silver lake until he reached a slab of what looked very much like gold, set in the floor in front of a statue. He knew you got inscriptions in tombs, although he was never sure who it was who was supposed to read them. The gods, possibly, although surely they knew everything already. He'd never considered that they'd cluster around and say things like, "Gosh, dearly beloved, was he? I never knew that." This one simply said, in pictograms, "One Sun Mirror." There wasn't anything about mighty conquests. There was no list of his tremendous achievements. There was nothing down there about wisdom or being the father of his people. There was no explanation. Whoever knows his name, it seemed to say, knows everything. And there was no admitting the possibility that anyone getting this far would not have heard the name of One Sun Mirror. The statue looked like porcelain. It had been painted quite realistically. One Sun Mirror seemed an ordinary sort of man. You would not have pointed him out in a crowd as emperor material. But this man with his little round hat and little round shield and little round men on little round ponies had glued together a thousand warring factions into one great empire, often using their own blood to do it. Rincewind looked closer. Of course, it was just an impression, but around the set of the mouth and the look of the eyes there was an expression he'd last seen on the face of Genghis Cohen. It was the expression of someone who was absolutely and totally unafraid of anything. The little boat headed towards the far side of the lake. One of the globes flickered a little and then faded to red. It winked out. Another followed it. He had to get out. There was something else, though. At the foot of the statue, lying as if they'd just been dropped there, were a helmet, a pair of gauntlets, and two heavy-looking boots. Rincewind picked up the helmet. It didn't look very strong, but it did look quite light. Normally he didn't bother with protective clothing, reasoning that the best defence against threatening danger was to be on another continent. But right now the idea of armour had its attractions. He removed his hat, put the helmet on, put down the visor, and then wedged the hat on top of the helmet. There was a flicker in front of his eyes, and Rincewind was staring at the back of his own head. It was a grainy picture, and it was in shades of green rather than proper colours, but it was definitely the back of his own head he was looking at. People had told him what it looked like. He raised the visor and blinked. The pool was still in front of him. He lowered the visor. There he was, about 50 feet away, with his helmet on his head. He waved a hand up and down. The figure in the visor waved a hand up and down. He turned around and faced himself. Yep, that was him. Okay, he thought. A magic helmet. It lets you see yourself a long way away. Great. You can have fun watching yourself fall into holes you can't see because they're right up close. He turned around again, raised the visor, and inspected the gloves. They seemed as light as the helmet, but quite clumsy. You could hold a sword, but not much else. He tried one on. Immediately, with a faint sizzling noise, a row of little pictures lit up on the wide cuff. They showed soldiers. Soldiers digging, soldiers fighting, soldiers climbing. Ah, so, magic armour. Perfectly normal magic armour. It had never been very popular in Ankh Morpork. Of course it was light, you could make it as thin as cloth, but it tended to lose its magic without warning, Many an ancient lord's last words had been, "You can't kill me because I've got magic." Ah! Rincewind looked at the boots, with suspicious recollection of the trouble there had been with the university's prototype Seven League boots. Footwear which tried to make you take steps 21 miles long imposed unfortunate groinal strains. They'd got the things off the student just in time, but he'd still had to wear a special device for several months, and ate standing up. All right, but even old magic armour would be useful now. It wasn't as if it weighed much, and the mud of Hung Hung hadn't improved what was left of his own boots. He put his feet into them. He thought, well, so, what's supposed to happen now? He straightened up, and behind him, with the sound of 7,000 flower pots smashing together, the lightning still crackling over them, the Red Army came to attention. Hex had grown a bit during the night. Adrian Turnipseed, who had been on duty to feed the mice and rewind the clockwork and clean out the dead ants, had sworn that he'd done nothing else and that no one had come in. But now, where there had been the big, clumsy arrangement of blocks so that the results could be read, was a quill pen in the middle of a network of pulleys and levers.
Watch,
said Adrian, nervously tapping out a very simple problem.
It's come up with this after doing all those spells at supper time.
The ants scuttled, the clockwork spun, the springs and levers jerked so sharply that Ponder took a step back. The quill pen wobbled over to an inkwell, dipped, returned to the sheet of paper Adrian had put under the levers, and began to write.
It blots a bit, he said in a helpless tone of voice. What's happening?
Ponder had been thinking further about this. The latest conclusions hadn't been comforting.
Well, we know that books containing magic become a little bit sapient, he began, and we've made a machine for...
You mean it's alive?
Come on, let's not get all occult about this, said Ponder, trying to sound jovial. We're wizards, after all.
Listen, you know that long problem in Thaumic Fields you wanted me to put in?
Yes, well?
It gave me the answer at midnight, said Adrian, his face pale.
Good.
Yes, good, except that I didn't actually give it the problem until 1:30, Ponder.
You're telling me you got the answer before you asked the question?
Yes.
Why did you ask the question, then?
I thought about it, and I thought maybe I had to. I mean, it couldn't have known what the answer was going to be if I didn't give it the problem, right?
Good point. You waited 90 minutes, though.
Adrian looked at his pointy boots.
I was hiding in the privy. Well, redo from start could...
All right, all right. Go and have something to eat.
Are we meddling with things we don't understand, Ponder?
Ponder looked up at the gnomic bulk of the machine. It didn't seem threatening, merely... other. He thought, meddle first, understand later. You had to meddle a bit before you had anything to try to understand, and the thing was never, ever to go back and hide in the lavatory of unreason. You have to try to get your mind around the universe before you can give it a twist.
Perhaps we shouldn't have given you a name.
We didn't think about that. It was a joke. But we should have remembered that names are important. A thing with a name is a bit more than a thing.
Off you go, Adrian,
he said firmly. He sat down and carefully typed, hello. Thing's word. The quill wrote, plus, 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 question mark, plus, 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 hello, plus, 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 redo from start, plus, plus, plus. Far above, a butterfly, its wings an undistinguished yellow, with black markings, fluttered through an open window. Ponder began the calculations for the transfer between Hung Hung and Ankh-Morpork. The butterfly alighted for a moment on the maze of glass pipes. When it rose again, it left behind a very small blob of nectar. Ponder typed carefully far below. A small but significant ant, one of the scurrying thousands, emerged from a break in the tube and spent a few seconds sucking at the sweet liquid before going back to work. After a while, Hex gave an answer. Apart from one small but significant point, it was entirely correct. Rincewind turned around. With an echoing chorus of creaks and groans, the Red Army turned around too. And it was red. It was the same colour, Rincewind realised, as the soil. He'd bumped into a few statues in the darkness. He hadn't realised that there were this many. They stretched rank on rank into the distant shadows. Experimentally, he turned around. Behind him, there was another chorus of stampings. After a few false starts, he found that the only way to end up facing them was to take off the boots, turn, and put the boots on again. He lowered the visor for a moment and saw himself lowering the visor for a moment. He stuck up an arm. They stuck out their arms. He jumped up and down. They jumped up and down with a crash that made the globes swing. Lightning sizzled from their boots. He felt a sudden hysterical urge to laugh. He touched his nose. They touched their noses. He made, with terrible glee, the traditional gesture for the dismissal of demons. 7,000 terracotta middle fingers stabbed towards the ceiling. He tried to calm down. The word his mind had been groping for finally surfaced, and it was golem. There were one or two of them, even in Ankh-Morpork. You were bound to get them in any area where you had wizards or priests of an experimental turn of mind. They were usually just figures made out of clay and animated with some suitable spell or prayer. They pottered about doing simple odd jobs, but they were not very fashionable these days. The problem was not putting them to work, but stopping them from working. If you set a golem to digging a garden, then forgot about it, you'd come back to find it had planted a row of beans 1,500 miles long. Rincewind looked down at one of the gloves. He cautiously touched the little picture of a fighting soldier. The sound of 7,000 swords being simultaneously unsheathed was like the tearing of a thick sheet of steel. 7,000 points were pointed right at Rincewind. He took a step back. So did the army. He was in a place with thousands of artificial soldiers wearing swords. The fact that he appeared to have control of them was no great comfort. He'd theoretically had control of Rincewind for the whole of his life, and look what happened to him. He looked at the little pictures again. One of them showed a soldier with two heads. When he touched it, the army turned about smartly. Ah! Now to get out of here. The Horde watched the bustle among Lord Hong's men. Objects were being dragged to the front line.
"They don't look like archers to me," said Boy Willie.
"Those things are barking dogs," said Cohen. "I should know. Seen them before. They're like a barrel full of fireworks, and when the fireworks are lit, a big stone comes rushing out the other end."
"Why?"
"Well, would you hang around if someone had just lit a firework by your arse?"
"Here, Teach, he said arse," complained Truckle. "Look, on my bit of paper here, it says you mustn't say arse."
"We've got shields, haven't we?" said Mr. Savaloy. "I'm sure if we keep close together and put the shields over our heads, we'll be as right as rain."
"The stone's about a foot across and going very fast, and it's red hot."
"Not shields, then?"
"No," said Cohen. "Truckle, you push Hamish." "We won't get 50 yards, Genghis," said Caleb. "Better 50 yards now than 6 feet in a minute, yes?" said Cohen.
"Bravo," said Mr. Savaloy.
"What?"
said Mad Hamish.
Lord Hong watched them. He saw the Horde hang their shields around the wheelchair to form a crude travelling wall, and saw the wheels begin to turn. He raised his sword.
"Fire!"
"Still tamping the charges, O Lord."
"I said fire!"
"Got to prime the dogs, O Lord."
The bombardiers worked feverishly, spurred on less by terror of Lord Hong than by the onrushing Horde. Mr. Savaloy's hair streamed in the wind. He bounded through the dust, waving his sword and screaming. He'd never been so happy in all his life. So this was the secret at the heart of it all, to look death right in the face and charge. It made everything so utterly simple. Lord Hong threw down his helmet.
"Fire, you wretched peasants, you scum of the earth! Why must I ask twice? Give me that torch!"
He pushed the bombardier aside, crouched down beside a dog, heaved on it so that the barrel was pointing at the oncoming Cohen, lifted the torch. The earth heaved. The dog reared and rolled sideways. A round, red head, smiling faintly, rose out of the ground. There were screams in the ranks as the soldiers looked down at the moving dirt under their boots, tried to run on a surface that was just shifting soil, and disappeared in the rising cloud of dust. The ground caved in. Then it caved out again, as stricken soldiers climbed up one another to escape, because rising gently through the turmoil was the soil in human shape. The Horde skidded to a halt.
"What are they, trolls?" said Cohen.
10 of the figures were visible now, industriously digging at the air. Then they stopped. One of them turned its gently smiling head this way and that. A sergeant must have screamed a handful of archers into line, because a few arrows shattered on the terracotta armour with absolutely no effect. Other red warriors were climbing up behind the former diggers. They collided with them with a sound of crockery. Then, as one man, or troll, or demon, they drew their swords, turned round, and headed towards Lord Hong's army. A few soldiers tried to fight them simply because there was too great a crowd behind them to run away. They died. It wasn't that the Red Guards were good fighters. They were very mechanical, each one performing the same thrust, parry, slash, regardless of what their opponent was doing. But they were simply unstoppable. If their opponent escaped one of the blows but didn't get out of the way, then he was just trodden on, and by the looks of things, the warriors were extremely heavy. And it was the way the thing smiled all the time that added to the terror. "Well, now, there's a thing," Cohen said, feeling for his tobacco pouch.
"Never seen trolls fight like that," said Truckle.
Rank after rank was walking up out of the hole, stabbing happily at the air. The front row were moving in a cloud of dust and screams. It is hard for a big army to do anything quickly, and divisions trying to move forward to see what the trouble was were getting in the way of fleeing individuals seeking a hole to hide in and permanent civilian status. Gongs were banging and men were trying to shout orders, but no one knew what the gongs were meant to mean or how the orders should be obeyed because there didn't seem to be enough time. Cohen finished rolling his cigarette and struck a match on his chin.
"Right," he said to the world in general, "let's get that bloody Hong."
The clouds overhead were less fearsome now. There was less lightning, but there were still a lot of them. Greeny black, heavy with rain.
"But this is amazing," said Mr. Savaloy.
A few drops hit the ground, leaving wide craters in the dirt.
"Yeah, right," said Cohen.
"A most strange phenomenon. Warriors rising out of the ground."
The craters joined up. It felt as though the drops were joining up as well. The rain began to pour down.
"Dunno," said Cohen, watching a ragged platoon flee past. "Never been here before. Perhaps this happens a lot."
"I mean, it's just like that myth about the man who sewed dragon's teeth and terrible fighting skeletons came up."
"I don't believe that," said Caleb, as they jogged after Cohen.
"Why not? If you sew dragon's teeth, you should get dragons, not fighting skeletons. What did it say on the packet?" "I don't know. The myth never said anything about them coming in a packet."
"Should have said, comes up dragons on the packet."
"You can't believe myths," said Cohen. "I should know. Right, there he is," he added, pointing to a distant horseman.
The whole plain was in turmoil now. The Red Warriors were only the start. The alliance of the five warlords was glass fragile in any case, and panicky flight was instantly interpreted as a sneak attack. No one paid any attention to the horde. They didn't have any coloured pennants or gongs. They weren't traditional enemies. And besides, the soil was now mud, and the mud flew, and everyone from the waist down was the same colour, and this was rising.
"What are we doing, Genghis?" said Mr. Savaloy.
"We're heading back for the palace."
"Why?"
"'Cause that's where Hong's gone."
"But there's this astonishing..."
"Look, Teach, I've seen walking trees and spider gods and big green things with teeth," said Cohen. "It's no good going round saying astonishing all the time. Ain't that so, Truckle?"
"Right. Do you know, when I went after the five-headed vampire goat over in Skund, they said I shouldn't on account of it being an endangered species. I said, yes, that was down to me. Were they grateful?"
said Caleb. "Should have thanked you, giving them all those endangered species to worry about. Turn around and go home right now, soldier boy."
A group of soldiers, fighting to get away from the Red Warriors, skidded in the mud, started in terror at the horde, and headed off in a new direction. Truckle stopped for breath, rain streaming off his beard.
"I can't be having with this running, though," he said. "Not hand push Hamish's wheelchair in all this mud. Let's have a breather."
"What? Stop him for a breather?"
said Cohen.
"My gods, I never thought I'd see the day. A hero having a rest. Did Volton the Indestructible have a bit of a rest?"
"He's having one now. He's dead, Genghis," said Caleb.
Cohen hesitated.
"What, old Volton?"
"Didn't you know? And the immortal Jenkins."
"Jenkins isn't dead. I saw him only last year."
"But he's dead now. All the heroes are dead, Septos. And I ain't too sure about me, too."
Cohen splashed forward and snatched Caleb upright by his shirt.
"What about Harun? He can't be dead. He's half our age."
"Last I heard, he got a job. Sergeant of the Guard somewhere."
"Sergeant of the Guard?" said Cohen. "What, for pay?"
"Yep. But what, like,
for pay?"
"He told me he might make captain next year. He said it's a job with a pension." Cohen released his grip.
"There's not many of us now, Cohen," said Truckle.
Cohen spun round.
"All right, but there's never been many of us, and I ain't dying. Not if it means the world's taken over by bastards like Hong, who don't know what a chieftain is."
"Scum.
That's what he called his soldiers, scum. It's like that bloody civilised game you showed us, Teach."
"Cheers."
"Right. The prawns are just there to be slaughtered by the other side, while the king just hangs around at the back."
"Yeah, but the other side's you, Cohen."
"Right, right. Well, yes, that's fine when I'm the enemy, but I don't shove men in front of me to get killed instead of me, and I never use bows and them dog things. When I kill someone, it's up close and personal. Armies? Bloody tactics? There's only one way to fight, and that's everyone charging all at once, waving their swords and shouting. Now, on your feet, and let's get after him."
"It's been a long morning, Genghis," said Boy Willie. "Don't give me that. I could do with the lavatory. It's all this rain."
"Let's get Hong first."
"If he's hiding in the privy, that's fine by me."
They reached the city gates. They had been shut. Hundreds of people, citizens as well as guards, watched them from the walls. Cohen waved a finger at them.
"Now, I ain't going to say this twice," he said. "I'm coming in, okay? It can be the easy way, or it can be the hard way."
Impassive faces looked down at the skinny old man, and up at the plain, where the armies of the warlords fought one another, and in terror, the terracotta warriors. Down, up. Down, up.
"Right," said Cohen. "Don't say afterwards I didn't warn you."
He raised his sword and prepared to charge.
"Wait," said Mr. Savaloy. "Listen."
There was a shouting behind the walls, and some confused orders, and then more shouting, and then a couple of screams. The gates swung open, pulled by dozens of citizens. Cohen lowered his sword.
"Ah," he said, "they've seen reason, have they?"
Wheezing a little, the horde limped through the gates. The crowd watched them in silence. Several guards lay dead. Rather more had removed their helmets and decided to opt for a bright new future in Civvy Street, where you were less likely to get beaten to death by an angry mob. Every face watched Cohen, turning to follow him as flowers follow the sun. He ignored them.
"Crowdy the Strong," he said to Caleb.
"Dead."
"Can't be. He was a picture of health when I saw him a couple of months ago. Going on a new quest and everything."
"Dead."
"What happened?"
"You know the terrible man-eating Sloth of Klopp?
The one they say guards the giant ruby of the mad snake god?"
"The very same. Well, it was." The crowd parted to let the horde through. One or two people tried a cheer, but were shushed into silence. It was a silence that Mr. Savaloy had only heard before in the most devout of temples. The only sound the horde had ever heard in temples was people shouting, "Infidel, he has stolen the jewelled eye of... your wife is a big hippo." There was a whispering, though, growing out of that watchful silence like bubbles in a pot of water on a hot fire. It went like this.
"The Red Army, the Red Army."
"How about Organdy Sloggo? Still going strong down in her wonderland, last I heard."
"Dead. Metal poisoning."
"How?"
"Three swords through the stomach."
"The Red Army."
"Slasher Mungo?"
"Presumed dead in Scund."
"Presumed?"
"Well, they only found his head."
"The Red Army."
The horde approached the inner gates of the Forbidden City. The crowd followed them at a distance. These gates were shut too. A couple of heavy-set guards were standing in front of them. They wore the expressions of men who'd been told to guard the gates and were going to guard the gates come what may. The military depends on people who will guard gates or bridges or passes come what may, and there are often heroic poems written in their honour, invariably posthumously.
"Gosbar the Wake?"
"Died in bed, I heard."
"Not old Gosbar."
"Everyone's got to sleep sometime."
"That's not the only thing they've got to do, mister,"
said Boy Willie.
"I really need the what's-name."
Well, does the wall?
Not with everyone watching. That ain't civilised.
Cohen strode up to the guards. I'm not mucking about, he said. Okay? Would you rather die than betray your emperor? The guards stared ahead. Right, fair enough. Cohen drew his sword. A thought seemed to strike him. Nurka, he said. Big Nurka. Tough as old boots, him. Fishbone, said Caleb.
Nurka? He once killed 6 trolls with a...
Choked on a fishbone in his gruel. I thought you knew. Sorry. Cohen stared at him, and then at his sword, and then at the guards. For a moment there was silence, broken only by the sound of the rain. You know, lads, he said, in a voice so suddenly full of weariness that Mr. Savaloy felt a pit opening up here at the moment of triumph. I was going to chop your heads off, but what's the point, eh? I mean, when you get right down to it, why bother? What sort of difference does it make?
The guards still stared straight ahead, but their eyes were widening. Mr. Savaloy turned.
You'll end up dead anyway, sooner or later, Cohen went on.
Well, that's about it. You live your life the best way you can, and then it don't actually matter because you're dead.
Cohen, said Mr. Savaloy, I mean, look at me. Been chopping heads off my whole life, and what have I got to show for it? Cohen!
The guards weren't just staring now. Their faces were dragging themselves into very creditable grimaces of fear.
Cohen!
Yeah, what?
I think you should look round, Cohen.
Cohen turned. Half a dozen red warriors were advancing up the street. The crowd had pulled right back and were watching in silent terror. Then a voice shouted,
Extended duration to the Red Army!
Cries rose up here and there in the crowd. A young woman raised her hand in a clenched fist.
Advance necessarily with the people while retaining due regard for traditions.
Others joined her. Deserved correction to enemies.
I've lost Mr. Bunny.
The red giants clonked to a halt.